Today on Dana's Low Carb for Life, I'm going to fill you in about the low carb cruise I just came back from, so stick around. You are listening to Dana's Low Carb for Life. Hey gang, welcome to episode 15 of Dana's Low Carb for Life, brought to you by Carb Smart, your smart choice for a low carb lifestyle. You hear how hoarse I am? I just got back from the low carb cruise, where I spent every single evening conversing with lovely people in noisy bars. So I've been talking over people for a week, and my voice is absolutely fried. That's why I sound like this. I, of course, had a fantastic time, as always, on the cruise. And this show, I'm not going to do the usual magazine format. I'm going to dedicate the whole thing to giving you the rundown on the cruise. I'll pass on some of the stuff I've learned. I'll tell you about the cruise in general. First of all, let me, though, give you the rundown about the next year's cruise. For those of you who complained I did not tell you about this year's cruise early enough for you to come along, I am telling you right this second that next year's cruise is tentatively scheduled to start April 29th. We'll be going out of Galveston. I will continue to update you throughout the year. We're going to be sailing on the Carnival Magic, which is one of the newest and biggest boats in the fleet. And it should be even more fantastic. This is going to be a 7-night cruise last year. That's the longest we've done. This year was a 6-night. The sail date, like I said, is tentatively April 29th. But this far out, that is subject to change. You want to keep an eye on www.lowcarbcruiseinfo.com for detail. We will put that link up on the show page at danaslowcarbforlife.com. You also should go to the Low Carb Cruise Facebook group right now and like it so that you're on that list. That will give you all the info as it happens. It'll keep you updated. You so seriously want to be on this cruise. Okay, here's my confession. I gained weight on my low carb cruise. I was up 5 pounds yesterday morning over my weight the day before I left for the cruise. No, I did not eat anything obviously evil on the cruise. I swear to you, not a single thing. But I was somewhat out of control of my food. You know, who knows when they sneak a little sugar into a salad dressing, some cornstarch into a soup, something like that. I can't blame them for doing that. Those are standard recipes. They had thousands of people. We were a little over 100. So, you know, they're obviously trying to serve the masses. I also confess I ate half a grapefruit every morning. That's about 11 grams of usable carb. And I ate a lot more vegetables than I usually do at home since they were there for the eating with no need to prepare them myself. And that does add up. Of course, the fact that I drank every night and somewhat more than I usually do with that, because at home I usually have a glass or two of wine with dinner and that about covers it. Yeah, the drinking didn't help either. Still, I did all meat and eggs yesterday, and this morning I was down 2 pounds already, so I am not letting this weight get comfy. I am going to knock it off, and if you read the blog, you'll hear about that, or the Facebook group. Our panel of speakers this year was really great. One of the great things about the cruise is you get to meet all these incredibly cool people. I get all fangirl, and it's only getting better. But our panel of speakers this year started with a fellow named Tom Naughton. I don't know if you know Tom Naughton, but if you don't, you should. Tom Naughton is a comedian. You bet. Tom is a seriously, seriously funny guy. He is also a seriously, seriously smart guy. And he has made a few years ago a documentary called Fathead. Fathead is now the number one documentary at Hulu. You can also get it through Netflix. And if you have, I think you can buy it through Amazon.com too. If you haven't watched Fathead yet, you need to. It is incredibly funny and unbelievably informative. Just as importantly, if you are plagued by people telling you that your low-carb diet is going to kill you,
you know, people who keep telling you about Morgan Spurlock's Supersize Me and think it's some sort of brilliant revelation, get a copy of Fathead, keep it on hand, plug it into the DVD player the next time they're over. Because Tom actually started Fathead as a project as a rebuttal to Supersize Me. Tom ate fast food for a month, all three meals a day, and lost 12 pounds in a month and improved his blood work because he chose the lower-carb fast food. And he also presents the science of low-carb in an incredibly entertaining format. He also covers the politics, which is really very interesting. I'm telling you, it's hilarious and incredibly educational at the same time. So do watch Fathead. Tom's presentation this year was called Science for Smart People, and it was aimed at helping everyone understand the kind of scientific double talk that too often lets biased researchers bamboozle people. And I am very much hoping that he's going to make it available on YouTube, because you really, really need to see it. We also heard from Dr. Mary Vernon. I don't know if you know Dr. Mary Vernon. She is one of the most experienced diabetologists and bariatric, that is, weight loss physicians in the country. Dr. Vernon is also, of course, co-author of The Atkins Diabetes Revolution. All the patients who come into Dr. Vernon's office, I mean all the patients who come into Dr. Vernon's office, are put on a low-carb diet, and she covered the biochemistry of low-carb. She showed a slide after slide after slide, not of before and after pictures, but of the test results, of the really stunning test results people achieve in her clinic, raising HDL, lowering triglycerides, lowering blood sugar, lowering insulin, all of that stuff, along, of course, with weight loss. Dr. Vernon also spoke extensively about some of the newer discoveries about this sort of things. One thing that was really interesting to me is a term that I think was new to a lot of people, and that was metabolically obese normal weight. Metabolically obese, normal weight. We've all been told so often that our health problems are caused by our obesity. We have been told that it is a very simple thing that, you know, the weight is what's causing the illnesses. So it is fascinating to know that this is just not the case. There is a sizable group of patients who have all of the metabolic consequences that we associate with obesity, the high triglycerides, low HDL, high blood sugar, all of that stuff, while they still maintain a normal weight. It's not that obesity causes all the health consequences, but rather that all of the health consequences, including the obesity, are coming from the same source, which is, of course, high levels of insulin. Although that is not the most interesting thing I learned from Dr. Vernon. The most interesting thing I learned from Dr. Vernon is very new, and it's that it has recently been discovered that we have taste buds in our guts. Yes, we have taste buds in our intestines. I mean, really, truly taste buds, the same kind of tissue we have in our tongue. She says it's exactly the same thing. It's identical. The implications of taste buds in your gut are not entirely clear, but it turns out this may be very bad news when it comes to our low-carb sweeteners, because it looks like that these taste buds in our gut means that our guts are tasting the sweetness, triggering chemicals that can raise our blood sugar or insulin, and at the very least make us hungry. This could explain why when I tried eating sugar-free cheesecake for breakfast recently, I was hungry again in a couple of hours, even though I was eating a lot of protein and a lot of fat and very few carbs. I asked Dr. Vernon about the implications of the taste buds in the gut, since it's such new information. And she said it's not entirely clear yet. She did say that it seems that Splenda doesn't seem to trigger as many problems as some other sweeteners, but all of this is very tentative at this point. By the way, for those of you who favor stevia and other natural low-carb sweeteners, and I know there's a lot of you out there, if indeed the sweet taste is a trigger for wonky blood sugar and for hunger, all the naturalness in the world isn't going to help. I will keep you posted as I learn more about this, but I thought you needed to know that there is some question about this now. Another speaker was Jackie Eberstein. I've gotten to know Jackie reasonably well on these cruises. Jackie was Dr. Atkins' clinic manager for 30 years. She was his right-hand person. And what Jackie doesn't know about the day-to-day practical ins and outs of low-carbohydrate dieting, nobody knows. And she's, by the way, a truly fabulous human being, as is her husband, Conrad. Jackie spoke about plateaus and how to break them. Very useful, by the way, was an actual definition of a plateau that they used at the Atkins Center. And their definition of a plateau was 6 weeks with neither weight loss nor inch loss. 6 weeks, not a week, not 2 weeks, 6 weeks with neither weight loss nor inch loss. Often at the Atkins Center, she said, they would see people's weight stall, but they'd still be losing inches slowly, and then the weight would suddenly catch up. Still, it is true that plateaus do happen, and they can be frustrating. And indeed, she talked about a long, long plateau of her own. Jackie mentioned one of the big causes of plateaus being very simply carb creep. Those carbs that start to sneak back into your diet when you're not paying attention, 5 grams here, 5 grams there, like my grapefruit at breakfast, like eating a lot more vegetables than you normally would. It doesn't have to be anything really noticeably evil if you're metabolically sensitive enough. So she suggests that you really, if you've had a long plateau, you need to go back to induction and you need to keep a food diary. You should also know that Jackie is no fan of most low-carb specialty products, and she warns that if you're stalled, the first thing you need to do is axe the specialty products entirely, go back to eating real food, meat, eggs, vegetables, maybe a few nuts and seeds, fat, that's it. You may even need to limit vegetables if you are metabolically resistant enough. Two, Jackie had a list of medications that can slow or stall weight loss. Now, I can't remember them all because it was a pretty long list. I will email Jackie and see if I can get a copy of that list and put it up on the blog. But the list did include steroids and also NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, things like Celebrex and the other COX-2 inhibitors. But that also includes ibuprofen. Yikes. I don't know about you, but we buy ibuprofen in the big bottle around here, so that's something to keep in mind. Also, of course, a fair number of antidepressants can slow or stall weight loss and birth control. Now, Jackie's feeling is if you need, really need medically, one of these or more of these drugs that will limit your ability to lose weight, what you really need to do is adjust your expectations and not beat yourself up about not losing weight when what you're doing is more important to your health. Still, you can always talk to your doctor and your pharmacist and see if you are indeed taking something that's affecting your weight. That's something to look at if you're stalled, if you're plateaued. Talk to your pharmacist, since pharmacists tend to really know more about drugs than doctors do. And then talk to your doctor and your pharmacist both about seeing if you can adjust medication to something that won't stall you so badly. Still, if the drug is important to your health, then that's what's most important, obviously. Another cause of plateaus, Jackie pointed out, can be stress. We all know about job stress, family stress, money stress. But there is another source of stress that Jackie mentioned, and it was mentioned by other people on the panel. So I'm going to tell you about that in a little bit. I think you'll be surprised about this other source of stress. Oh, one other thing Jackie mentioned was yeast problems, yeast overgrowth. And that if you have yeast infections, and a lot of people do, that will inhibit weight loss, and you need to get a handle on that. Another speaker that first day was Fred Hahn. I have interviewed Fred Hahn for this podcast. If you haven't listened to that, I think that was my second podcast. And Fred, of course, is a trainer, and he runs Serious Strength Gym in Manhattan. And he wrote the book Slow Burn Fitness Revolution with Michael and Mary Dan Eads, who are best known for writing Protein Power. Fred is on these cruises because he is a trainer who is absolutely sold on low-carbohydrate nutrition. Indeed, he said that when people come into his gym to sign up, he tells them they need to go low-carb, and if they flat-out refuse to go low-carb, he will not take them as a client, and he tells them to come back when they're ready. Fred spoke, of course, about weightlifting, about resistance exercise, and most particularly about slow burn, which is, I am telling you, an insanely efficient way to work out. You think I'm exaggerating? 20 minutes of slow burn per week, you heard that right, will change your body. Indeed, you're not supposed to do slow burn more often than twice a week. 20 minutes twice a week is the most you're supposed to be doing. That's pretty amazing, since I just read today a comment on Facebook from a woman who is working out 2 hours a day trying to lose weight. Now, frankly, I don't have that kind of time. So 20 minutes a week, that's a big improvement. And that nice boy I married and I have been doing slow burn on our Total Gym, which is, you know, a piece of equipment that Chuck Norris and Christie Brinkley are always advertising on TV. And I am telling you, it really does make a difference in your body in that little time. And Fred is very clear on the fact, and by the way, the rest of the panel agrees with him, that resistance training, heavy weightlifting, will get you all the possible benefits of exercise, not just including muscle gain and fat loss, but also including improved cardiovascular health, lower blood pressure, improved insulin sensitivity, all of that. You really ought to read Slow Burn Fitness Revolution if you haven't read it. A new presenter this year was a Dr. Michael Fox. Dr. Fox is a reproductive endocrinologist, and he walked us through the effects of nutrition, and especially of carbohydrate and insulin, on the female reproductive system through all of the stages of life and change, from when you're a little girl, through menarche, when you start having periods, through your childbearing years, through pregnancy, which he says is really the most hormonally chaotic and dangerous time, and through menopause. In particular, Dr. Fox works with a whole lot of women who have PCOS, which he also calls PCOD, polycystic ovarian disorder, and sometimes just PCO. He says it's horribly common. It generally starts way earlier than people realize. You know, little girls have the signs of it early. I'm sure I did because, of course, it's clear I've been carb intolerant my whole life. And Dr. Fox often finds that a low-carbohydrate diet alone is sufficient to allow a previously infertile woman to get pregnant. Now, not always, by any means, but that is something that happens. Dr. Fox's talk was fascinating stuff. I very much hope he speaks again next year. I came after Dr. Fox. My presentation was called Behind the Low Carb Headlines, and it fit very neatly into Tom Naughton's presentation, earlier in the week about science, because I then talked about how, once you see a headline that says something about low-carb diets, how to read that article to determine whether there's any real science going on or not, and whether it's valid. That nice boy I married videoed my presentation. It is up on YouTube, and the links to that presentation are up at holdthetoast.com, so go there and give it a listen. I'll also be posting the links at carbsmart.com. So you should be able to watch it, and I hope you will. We also had Dr. Andreas Enfelt for the second year. Dr. Enfelt is from Sweden, and he has a blog called DietDoctor.com. He originally had a blog only in Swedish, but it's now in English as well, and it is DietDoctor.com. You really ought to check it out. Dr. Enfelt came because he practices medicine in Sweden, and he is completely sold on a low-carb diet. And furthermore, low-carb is booming in Sweden, where they openly refer to it as a low-carb, high-fat diet. They are brave enough to call it low-carb, high-fat. Bless their hearts. By the way, 20 other Swedish people came with him. It was really cool. We got out of a little over 100 people, 20 of us were Swedes. Very, very cool. Very nice people. And here's hoping we get even more. Perhaps Dr. Emfeldt's most arresting information was a map he showed of the United States showing the obesity rates starting at the beginning of the low-fat boom, back when the article about how bacon and eggs were bad for you was on the cover of Time magazine and in the early 80s, and then updating the map every 2 years to show the increases in obesity levels since then, with the colors changing on the map as the obesity rate in each state increases. Watching those colors change on that map was genuinely frightening. Dr. Emfeldt also had a graph of the decline in butter consumption in Sweden since they got the same stupid low-fat message. And also the graph showed the increase in obesity. And the lines were almost exactly inverse, including a little increase in butter consumption in the past few years when low-carb diets have become popular in Sweden, and at the same time, a slight decline in the obesity rate. So that was kind of neat to see. But here's a really important piece of information I got from Dr. Enfeldt, and this is going to make many of you very unhappy. I'm sorry to have to do this to you, but you need to know. There has now been a clinical study done of Dreamfields pasta, published in a medical journal, and they took Dreamfields and they compared it to standard pasta. The blood sugar curves are essentially identical. I mean, really no difference worth mentioning. I will write about this more in the blog, and I will link from holdthetoast.com to the article so you can see that graph of the two lines. But the basic news, the take-home message is this: Dreamfields ain't low-carb. I'm sorry to have to tell you that, but it's true. And I know there's a lot of you who love it and count on it. You're fooling yourselves. I'm sorry to have to tell you that. Now, if you're still losing weight, you know, that's fine. But if you're not, you know what the problem is. Well, then there was a panel Q&A. I participated in it, and boy, I felt out of my depth. You know, with all these doctors and stuff, I write cookbooks. But, boy, I'm honored. Some important points came out during the question and answer period. First of all, our medical experts, plus Fred Hahn, our exercise guru, all disdain intermittent fasting, which is currently very popular and which I have tried. Indeed, they all generally feel that it is best not to wait until you're hungry to eat. To eat, as Jackie Eberstein called it, preventatively. They do say this is less important the more keto-adapted you get, because as you become keto-adapted, you're not going to have anything like the swings in blood sugar. You're going to switch over to burning stored body fat far more easily. But the reason they say this is that they say that as your blood sugar declines, you tend to go into an adrenal fight or flight reaction, which is why when people get hypoglycemic, their heart races and they get lightheaded and all that stuff. And they say it's way harder to pull out of that adrenal tailspin than it is to simply prevent it in the first place. Indeed, I've talked on this show about the fact that I have a sleep disorder that's based on my cortisol levels rising at bedtime instead of declining. Cortisol, of course, being a stress hormone that should be up in the morning and down at night. And that cortisol level is what triggers my having higher blood sugar in the morning than I should. And Dr. Fox recommended that I quit this thing that I've been doing of not eating after 8 p.m. and have a good big snack at bedtime every night because, he says, it will minimize my cortisol production overnight, thus helping me sleep and lowering my morning blood sugar. So I've started doing that, and we'll see how it goes. Another point that came out in the panel is that the consensus is the more you can learn to live without sweeteners, the better. I was the least adamant about this, being, as I am, a cookbook author. The more people have learned to do without that stuff, the better. But my feeling is if being able to have a slice of cheesecake now and then is what keeps you on the straight and narrow. Otherwise, I don't have a problem with that. And I did notice that several members of the panel were eating the sugar-free cheesecake in the dining room at night. Still, it's best to try to keep your sweeteners to a minimum. Now, flashback. Remember I said I was going to tell you about another source of stress that they talked about that can cause plateaus? This is really going to shock you. All of our experts, both the medical folks and Fred alike, all feel that aerobic exercise, cardio exercise, far from being beneficial for your health, is simply a source of stress. We're not talking about a pleasant stroll in the sunshine. That kind of thing is okay. You know, that nice boy I married and I like to walk to the end of the street and back on a nice day, and it's a very relaxing thing to do. What we're talking about is the serious cardio, the running, the elliptical machine, the spinning, all of that. You think it's good for you, our panel would disagree. Heavy weightlifting, again, is going to give you all the possible benefits of exercise, but in between those sessions, your body needs rest to recover and grow new muscle. And Fred, in particular, is adamant about this, but Dr. Fox says that he recommends his patients stop doing cardio to improve their blood sugar levels. Another question that was asked of the panel was about detox diets, and Dr. Fox said succinctly that if you were toxic enough to need detoxing, you'd be in the ER. Humble little me actually piped up here and made the point that way, way too often what's called a detox diet is actually a juice fast or a period of drinking juice and eating a lot of fruit. Well, the single hardest thing on your liver other than, you know, outright poison and possibly even worse than alcohol is fructose. So drinking a lot of juice to supposedly clear out your liver and detox is crazy talk. So, you know, the bottom line on that is just don't eat junk. You know, don't toxify yourself to begin with. But other than that, just, you know, start eating clean and your body will detox. So that's kind of an overview of what was talked about in these sessions. And really, I learn something every year, and I'm sure you would too. And I won't drop any names right now, but there are already some really big names being talked about for next year's cruise, and I'm really excited. I'm not even sure I'm going to speak next year. We'll see. But I may just sit back and listen. So let's talk about food on the cruise, because, you know, everybody talks about food on cruises, and everybody's sure that, you know, when you go on cruises, you're just going to eat a lot of junk and whatever. No, 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 no. There was a ton of low-carb food available at every meal, and it was wonderful. And there's such a variety available that I really couldn't sample it all. I don't think anybody could. Breakfast is maybe my favorite meal on the cruise because every day on a cruise, I eat breakfast on the deck with the gentle sea breeze and the warm Caribbean sunshine just caressing me. And it's really wonderful and low-key and delightful. And one of the other really great joys of cruising is unlimited bacon with no need to clean up the grease. Other people do that for you. There's also, of course, some sort of sausage every morning, though some days it's combined, on this cruise at least, it was combined with a little onion or some other vegetables. There's also ham. I mentioned that I had grapefruit every morning. I'm very fond of pink grapefruit. Again, it runs 10 or 11 grams of usable carb per half. There's also melon available. Cantaloupe would be a lower carb choice than the grapefruit, but I'm not a big fan of cantaloupe. My favorite thing at breakfast is the omelet station. Well, no, my favorite thing is the bacon. After that, my favorite thing is the omelet station, where they make omelets fresh while you watch. Although I do wish they'd have a wider choice of fillings. They have peppers, onions, tomatoes, mushrooms, ham, cheddar cheese. And I generally ask for all of these in my omelet. You can also, by the way, ask them to put a couple of slices of bacon in there. I would love to see jalapenos, maybe sliced avocados, some other kinds of cheese, maybe Monterey Jack or mozzarella, something like that. I would love to see maybe some salsa available for topping omelets. But the omelets as they are great and filling and wonderful and fresh, and that's a really great feature. The omelet station can also fry eggs for you if you prefer. You can get scrambled eggs, but those are already pre-made out on the buffet in a chafing dish, since, of course, scrambled eggs can easily be made in advance and held. There's plenty of carby garbage available for breakfast, too. You know, the cold cereal and the muffins and the sweet rolls and the pancakes and the waffles and blah, 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 blah. But why would I bother? Bacon and eggs for me, baby. I don't understand the whole piles of starch for breakfast. For lunch, the options were vast. I mean, so big that sometimes I go through one line and then wander by another line and have to get in line in all other line because I was like, wait, no, there's this other thing in this line. Because the choices actually differ depending on which buffet line you happen to get in. There is a grill line with burgers and dogs if you want something simple. And that nice boy I married generally got a couple of cheeseburgers without the buns, and then went to the salad bar and doused him with blue cheese dressing. And that's what he ate for lunch, I think, every day. The food at the buffets varies every day. There's always a salad bar with plenty of salad fixings and also coleslaw. But the other dishes differ. And there's usually some kind of casserole-y thing, some fish dish. I had chicken souvlaki one day. I just took off the pita. I also that day had a great big pile of Greek salad with plenty of feta in it. That was a great meal. Another day, I had slabs of lovely rare roast beef. Yet another day, I had a couple of slabs of beautiful roast pork, which I love. There are also all sorts of cold cuts out if you want those. And the deli line has a very nice tuna salad available. One evening when I wanted a snack, the deli is open, I think, 24 hours. And one evening when I wanted a snack, I had a couple of scoops of tuna salad without the bread and just ate it with a fork. I completely missed the tandoori bar. The last day, one of our members said she'd been getting all of her lunches at the tandoori bar, which is an Indian food bar. I'm really hoping to have that on the next cruise because I missed that entirely and I love Indian food. Dinners on the cruise, well, you can, I mean, if you want to eat in the casual Lido Deck restaurant at dinner, you can, but dinners are generally served in the main dining rooms. Most people go to the main dining rooms where it's all white tablecloths and tuxedo-clad waiters and, you know, beautiful service and all of that. The dinners were sumptuous and the menus change nightly. It's not the same thing every night. We had Chateaubriand with Béarnaise, we had braised short ribs, we had salmon steaks, lobster tail, ribs, flat iron steak, all sorts of stuff like that. There's always a choice of soups, salads, appetizers, friendly not all the appetizers are for us, but there are all kinds of friendly appetizers like shrimp cocktail and escargot and things like that. I wouldn't have minded a little more imagination, though. Some more international flavors, something a little more cutting edge. I realize, again, that they're appealing to an audience of a couple of thousand people. So they have to go with stuff that's going to please a lot of people. And I will say that their pumpkin soup that I had and their broccoli cheese soup were both superb. I was a little disappointed that this was the first cruise I've been on where they never served lamb chops for dinner. I'm very fond of lamb, as longtime readers know. And I kept waiting for the lamb chops because they've always appeared on previous cruises. No lamb chops for me. But everything in the dining room was extremely well prepared, very tasty. And they also, I might add, saw to it that we had low-carb cheesecake and sugar-free ice cream available for desserts. So that's very nice. There's also a cheese plate available. Now, that's not sweet, of course. That's, you know, five or six kinds of cheese, maybe half an ounce of each. But it's a very nice end to a meal if you're not looking at having something sweet. If you're hungry in between meals, and by the way, the term between meals is different on a cruise than it is other places because the buffet lines are literally open for a few hours for each meal. So mealtimes stretch out quite a lot. You can get breakfast anytime from 6 in the morning till 11 or something, I forget. But even when the buffet lines are closed, you can still get stuff from the deli, from the pizza place, and, you know, since there's no extra charge, you may as well get 3 or 4 pieces of pepperoni pizza, eat the toppings, and throw away the crust, which is how low-carbers eat pizza. And I'm sure there were some other places that slipped my mind. And you can always get room service, of course. I might add, One of the great luxuries of cruising is that you can order all the food you like at no extra cost. All of your food is included in the price of your cruise. You can't choose between the soup and the escargot, or the escargot and the shrimp cocktail. Go ahead and get them both. You really like shrimp cocktail? You can have two. I saw people getting a couple of servings of escargot. Feel particularly peckish? You could have the steak and the salmon, or two lobster tails, or three lobster tails, or if you're Fred Hahn, five lobster tails. There will be no extra charge. They will bring them to you cheerfully. I do fear that we tax them a bit, actually, because, of course, most restaurants make quite a lot of their money filling people up with inexpensive carbs, and we eat none of that stuff. But, you know, we brought over 100 people onto their ship, so I'm not going to feel too sorry for them. Oh, beverages. Let's not forget beverages. Coffee, tea, milk, water, lemonade, which, of course, we're not going to drink, iced tea, and fruit punch. The fruit punch, again, we're not going to drink, are always available 24 hours a day at no extra charge. So those are your basic included beverages. Soda, however, is $2 per 12-ounce can, which can really add up if you've got a Diet Coke habit. You can buy a soda package. Soda package runs $6 a day, and they put a sticker on your onboard card that you use to charge everything. And I bought the soda package, even though, as many of you know, I despise soda pop, because with the soda package, I could drink unlimited club soda when I went out to the bars at night. And that keeps me from drinking alcohol to quench thirst, which is a great thing. It lets me keep hydrated, and I'll just sip on a glass of wine if I want one. But when I'm actually thirsty, I drink club soda with lime. As for the alcohol, I trust I don't have to tell you that alcohol is one of the ship's main profit centers. There's not a lot of free booze to be had on the ship. There is some, however. Returning cruisers get a party, generally the second night out, where they have an hour of free drinks. And they did give us, because we brought 100 people on the ship, they gave us a cocktail party the last night, and the drinks were on the house for an hour for us. Unfortunately, no one explained to the bartenders the whole low-carb thing. It was really very sad. They were bringing around trays of those fruity tropical drinks made, you know, with fruit juice and blue curacao and things like that, the kind of thing that's just crammed with sugar. And the poor bartenders were really terribly confused as to why so few people were actually taking the free drinks. They couldn't figure it out. That nice boy I married and I asked for dry red wine. They were happy to bring us that. Some other people got light beer. Carbsmart.com, bless their hearts, provided sugar-free Baja Bob's margarita mix, which they did mix up into margaritas for us. That, those were pretty popular. But I really hate to think how much money was wasted on those unconsumed beverages. It's a lot of curacao down the drain. Oh, well. So you add all of that great food and all that great education to stuff like Jimmy Moore and Tom Naughton singing Elvira in the karaoke lounge, nights of tropical breezes under a velvety black sky, swimming with stingrays in the indescribably blue waters off of Grand Cayman, tubing down the White River through a Jamaican jungle, and best of all, far and away the best of all, the people, just the nicest, nicest bunch of people you're ever going to meet. And this cruise was, once again, absolutely the highlight of my year. I do not get paid to say that. I don't even get paid to go. I pay my own way, as does everyone who speaks on these cruises. We all pay to go. We're in no way remunerated for this. We do it because we're passionate about this. And because, quite frankly, it's the most fun I have all year. It's been 2 days since I got home, and I'm already anxious to go again. So go to the show page at danaslowcarbforlife.com. Click on the link. Go to Facebook, you know, to the Low Carb Cruise page, and go to Facebook and like the Low Carb Cruise page at Facebook. because we're already talking about 2012. Like I said, there's some very big names being mentioned as speakers. I'm really excited about this, and you do want to be there. Anyway, if we can, you know, get to the point where we're taking 500 people along, they're going to start making special food for us. You know they are. So that's it for this week. I know I didn't do my usual magazine format. I just wanted to fill y'all in about the cruise. Next week, we will be back to the usual format. And in the meanwhile, since I don't have a special question for you this week, call 412-385-DANA. That's 412-385-3262 with questions, comments, inspirational stories, success stories, menu ideas, product reviews, anything that pertains to your low-carb diet. We want to hear about it. This week, it's totally your call. Yeah, really, any week it's your call, but usually I direct you a little. And remember, till next week, stay low-carb for life.
This is Dana Carpenter saying thanks for listening. If you like today's show, please leave a review at the iTunes store. You can always leave questions and comments at 412-385-DANA or write us at feedback@danaslowcarbforlife.com. For complete show notes, please visit our site at www.danaslowcarbforlife.com and don't forget to visit the blog at holdthetoast.com. Special thanks to Disc of Light Media and our sponsor, CarbSmart.com.